Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through. We continue with a relevant study of the Book of Revelation in a fireside chat with Dr. Gregory Eden-Nation, resident minister at Juvenati Mission. As he responds to questions on the Book of Revelation, here's Dr. Eden-Nation as he responds to the rapture in part 18 of Understanding the Times.
You know, whenever we've done the study of the Book of Revelation, I'm aware of that thinking. So I purposely stay away from it, and we just deal with the text so that when we come to the end, the people sort of sit back and they sort of scratch their heads and say, there's something missing here. You know, I've got a certain preconceived mold of how I have been taught this is how it's going to be, but I don't find it here. It's not here. So I have to go and find it somewhere else and import it into the Book of Revelation. And that's when the problem starts, because now I'm artificially trying to force something onto the Book of Revelation that doesn't come from the Book of Revelation. Now I begin to modify this over here, pull that straight over there, skew this one over here, and I come up with charts and draft schemes the way I'm trying to make these things work. And that's why I have so many different versions of it, because they're imposing something from outside the Book of Revelation onto the Book of Revelation, and that confuses matters. Now you get the 7-year period, and then after 3.5 years, the Antichrist made a covenant with Israel. And now none of that is in the Book of Revelation. It just doesn't exist. Not if you understand how this book is compiled. So the secret rapture, where people tell you that somewhere any time now, people are going to disappear from the earth and others are going to stay behind and they're going to have to contend with the great tribulation and all that, that's not from the Book of Revelation. Not if you understand it and you study it the way it was designed to be, as a drama that God put on stage. Maybe when the Lord Jesus comes, we will meet him in the air so that we can be together with him, and then the new heavens and new earth will be established. But when he comes visibly, he becomes publicly as the lightning strikes from the east to the west. Every eye will see him, and that will be the conclusion of everything according to the Book of Revelation. So the idea that there's a secret rapture, you will not find in the Book of Revelation.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also has to do with escapism, because I know the rapture also contains this idea that, don't worry, we won't be going through any hardships as believers. We'll be called up to heaven, and, you know, all the wicked people, they'll have the hardships. So I think it also comes from that. But Pastor, we're talking about the hardships, the tribulation. We read about four seals that are opened, and those four seals in Revelation 6 correspond to four people on four horses. And they're sent to sort of terrorize the world. And I just wanted to ask the question, why would God, if he's a loving God, send such horrible things to earth?
Well, you see, the state of brokenness that we find in the world today is not God's fault. That is because in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve decided to eat the fruit they were not supposed to eat. God said, if you eat of this fruit, you're going to die. They were fully aware of that. The choice was theirs. So they went ahead and ate that fruit, and it triggered, it unleashed a consequence, and part of that would be suffering in this world. Immediately after they had eaten that fruit, they were banished from the garden. Shortly after that, her one son rose up against his own brother and killed him. Death followed. Does that bring suffering? Is that torment? Obviously it is. If that had happened to your family, you would know the pain. You would know the anguish. The newspapers and the magazines and the internet is full of this stuff. A lot of heartache, a lot of pain. All of this was unnecessary. All of this came about because of deception. Eve was deceived because of willfulness. I went ahead and did what I wasn't supposed to do. Somehow thinking that there will be no consequences if I disobey God, in spite of the fact that I was told, you shall die. So that unleashed upon this world a program of suffering. And the suffering is not in the first place God's fault. It's the consequences of us going astray, each one parting with the ways of God. And you know, some people may turn around today and say, but I wasn't in the Garden of Eden. It's not my fault for what my great-great-grandparents did. And, you know, the Bible actually addresses that because we know Adam and Eve had sinned. So there were certain consequences for them. And now that curse went across to their children as well. But God did not come to Cain and Abel and judge them outright just because they were born into this world. In fact, when things started going wrong and Cain's sacrifice was not accepted, God came to him and said, Cain, why is your face looking like that? If you had done the right thing, wouldn't you be happy? But because you've done the wrong thing, listen here, watch out. Sin is crouching at your door. It's like a wound-up clock spring wild animal that wants to pounce upon you. It desires to have you, but you must overcome it. So God, in his loving graciousness, actually met with Cain and warned him and said, watch out, take care. Did this fellow heed the warning? No. He went and looked for the opportunity, and as soon as he got his brother to one side, he killed him. He attacked him. He hit him, and his blood was shed on the ground. And a curse came upon him. Did the curse come upon him just because he inherited a sinful nature from his father and mother? No, because he went and did the wrong thing. So right there in the first few chapters, chapter 1 to chapter 4 of Genesis, we are told, yes, there is this inherited condition of sinfulness that comes from Adam and Eve, original sin they call it, but it is not as if it is accounted to you until you yourself have gone and sinned. And that's what happened. So Cain was judged not because of the sin of his forefathers. He was judged because he transgressed. And that's important to know, that the tribulation, the hardships, the difficulties, the things that have gone wrong in this world are in the first place because of Adam and Eve that had sinned, but also in our own experience and context, we have made the wrong choices and we have done the wrong things and we sinned, and so we will be judged because of our sin. So in a dramatic way, like a show that's put on stage, these angels come to perpetrate, to carry out the just penalty for a world that has gone wayward and wrong.
Pastor Greg, where does COVID-19 fit into your thinking in regard to these plagues and things that are sent onto the earth? I know that a lot of people, when COVID happened, they thought, okay, all right, by the end of this year, we'll all be gone and in heaven, because they saw it as a sign of the end times.
Well, undoubtedly, I think pestilences and diseases and tragedies, even natural disasters, will escalate according to the book of Revelation as we draw closer to the end. It's almost as if all creation is groaning. It's like a ship that you can hear as the waves beat against it. The worse the storm becomes, the more it creaks and the more it begins to show signs of wear and tear. And Revelation wants to tell us that the earth will not endure forever. In fact, there's a phrase where it says, as long as the earth endures, that implies that some or other stage, all of creation subject to the curse will ultimately give up. A major disease like HIV/AIDS, for example, is undoubtedly an outcome of man's sin. I will not allow anybody to convince me otherwise. Just like COVID-19, just in a practical way, you can see it's probably what happened in Wuhan and what was unleashed upon the world because of people experimenting in areas they should not have been experimenting, doing the wrong thing. They did the wrong thing. Everybody knows that. Everybody's aware of it. Everybody wants to apportion blame. They were looking for who did this. It's a consequence of man's sinful behavior, man doing what he should not be doing. So it unleashes upon us this kind of a curse. You can expect, while man and his thoughts are no longer curtailed and the parameters are no longer kept that have been set there by God for a healthy and for a God-fearing existence, that the outcome will be disaster and we will be struck with plagues and pestilences and diseases and natural disasters that are a fulfillment of what we see in the book of Revelation.
In Revelations chapter 9, verse 1, we read about the abyss that was opened up and the smoke came out. What does that smoke symbolize?
If I can give some examples, in the early 80s, I think it was, my wife's friend was driving from Johannesburg to Pretoria on the M1. And that part of the world is quite flat. And at that time, it wasn't as developed as it is now. I mean, at this present time, Johannesburg and Pretoria are actually one big metropole. But if you left Johannesburg, you knew you left Johannesburg. Now you're out in the rural area, and it was all farmland. And it was like that when a fire had started and the wind was blowing from the west towards the eastern side and there was thick gray smoke that was over the highway. And this lady saw that the visibility was very bad and it was dangerous, so she slowed down and she moved over from the fast lane to the slower lane. As she approached the smoke, she saw there was a traffic officer. His car was parked on the side of the road. His lights were flashing. And he was standing in the slow lane and directing her over into the fast lane. So she thought, well, he's the traffic officer. He's the authority in charge. And he's directing her into the fast lane. So he must know what he's doing and it must be okay. She falsely relied on that authority figure to guide her in the right direction. So she moved back to the fast lane, she put her foot on the accelerator and she sped into the smoke, thinking it's going to be okay. She had hardly gone in when suddenly she saw these red lights in front of her in the smoke. That's all she could see was the red lights. And she put her foot on the brake and she drove into the big pileup that was inside that smoke. So what do we learn from that? Smoke is not tangible. You can put your hand right through the smoke. You won't even get a bruise on your palm or anywhere. That is misleading because it makes people think there's no big deal. Smoke is of no consequence. But the problem with the smoke is twofold. Firstly, the smoke hides things. There could be serious danger inside the smoke and you don't know about it. So if you speed into it, you can collide with 5 or 10 car pileup inside the smoke. The other problem with the smoke is that it changes the appearance of things. If you look at chapter 9, it says in verse 2, when he opened the abyss, smoke rose from it like the smoke from a gigantic furnace. That's the smoke now.
That was Dr. Gregory Donation in part 18 of Understanding the Times, a relevant study of the book of Revelation. Send us any questions you have about the book of Revelation to the email address that will be given at the end of this program. Stay tuned for part 19, same time tomorrow.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.